any negotiation with North Korea cannot proceed with continuation of these tests and provocation.
Nations ponder strategy on the Korean Peninsula. It's Thursday, May 18th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hello and welcome. Join us online at VOA Asia Facebook. Also ahead, the United States and Philippines practice as China watches, making Korean paper in the United States, shopping for funerals, and a glove to loosen your muscles. It's all on today's VOA Asia. The top U.S. Navy commander in the Pacific Wednesday warned of the real threat posed by North Korea's nuclear and missile programs. Admiral Harry Harris, who heads the Pacific Command, said in Tokyo, combining nuclear warheads with ballistic missile technology in the hands of a volatile leader like Kim Jong-un is a recipe for disaster.
I know there's some debate about the miniaturization and other technological advancements made by Pyongyang, but no one should be soothed by the reports of rocket failures in the press. Kim Jong-un is not afraid to fail in public. And every test he makes is a success because it takes North Korea one step closer to being able to deliver a nuclear-tipped missile anywhere in the world. I must assume that Kim Jong-un's claims are true because I know his aspirations certainly are. So I take him at his word, and that should provide all of us with a sense of urgency to address this problem now.
Harris said the North's dangerous behavior is not just a threat to the Korean Peninsula, it's also a threat to China and Russia. He called for a ratcheting up of sanctions on Pyongyang following its latest missile test Sunday. A unification ministry spokesman in Seoul, however, said the new government of President Moon Jae-in wants to reestablish communication links with Pyongyang for the sake of maintaining a stable relationship. What might those links involve? VOA's Victor Beatty put that question to James Kim, a research fellow at the Asan Institute for Policy Studies.
Well, it could be telephone lines. I know that there were hotlines during the time that there was a landmine incident. It could be a direct line between certain ministries in South Korea with certain offices and bureaucracies in North Korea. Or it could be direct channel of communication at the Joint Security Area. Along the DMZ.
Of course, those communication links have been cut since the last North Korean nuclear device. What would be the benefit of reestablishing them now?
Anytime you have a channel to minimize misunderstanding or misperception, I think it's a positive development for both sides so that each side can confirm if there were any mistakes or misunderstanding. So as to minimize miscalculation and misperceptions.
What reaction is there in the new South Korean administration to Sunday's latest ballistic missile launch by Pyongyang?
Well, the response from President Moon was fairly clear that any negotiation with North Korea cannot proceed with the continuation of these tests and provocation by North Korea. So those tests and or launches of missiles needs to stop in order for some earnest negotiation to occur if it's going to happen between the two countries.
James, Mr. Moon's envoy to the U.S. has left for Washington for talks on North Korea. What might those discussions involve?
Mr. Moon needs to first confirm what the Trump administration's strategy and approach would be on North Korea before he has his cabinet fully installed and confirmed by the National Assembly, and he can formulate his own North Korean policy. The fact that he is opening these channels of communication before he makes any major announcements about his North Korea policy is a positive sign. It shows that he's willing to first hear what the different sides would like to achieve, and he's going to try to customize and formulate his North Korean policy that would complement rather than oppose these other stakeholders' views, especially the United States, which is a very important ally for South Korea.
As the UN Security Council considers tougher sanctions on North Korea, U.S. United Nations Ambassador Nikki Haley on Tuesday said the United States hoped to persuade China to support the new measure. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on voanews.com. North Korean nukes and missiles recipe for disaster. In sign of closer Sino-Philippine ties, U.S. naval exercises skip a disputed sea. Indian court rules in favor of 10-year-old seeking late-term abortion. Militants storm Afghanistan's national broadcaster. Radical Burmese Buddhist monk is subject of documentary at Cannes Film Festival. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia and on our voanews.com website. We continue with VOA Asia. Annual exercises held by the Philippine and U.S. navies are skipping sensitive South China Sea maneuvers this year as the Southeast Asian nation's leader takes another step toward a stronger political and economic relationship with China, the sea's most ambitious claimant. The 11-day military exercises, which have 2 days remaining, include a disaster drill off Aurora Province on the Pacific Ocean side of the main Philippine island Luzon. They have kept clear of disputed tracts in the South China Sea. Beijing's maritime claims overlap Manila's in the South China Sea off the west coast of Luzon. Herman Kraft, a political scientist at the University of Philippines Diliman, says avoidance of the disputed sea advances Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte's friendship with China after 4 years of open disagreement that had landed in a world arbitration court.
President Duterte has never been a geopolitical person, which means that foreign policy is all about economic policy. And you can see this in the way that he actually justifies or explains the approach to China.
Duterte has visited China twice, met with Chinese President Xi Jinping, and agreed to hold talks going on this month over management of contested tracts of water. Benham Rise, a 13 million hectare undersea plateau believed to be rich in fossil fuels, was awarded to Manila in 2012 by the UN Commission on the Limits of the Continental Shelf. But Chinese vessels were spotted exploring it last year. Analysts like Eduardo Ararol, an associate professor at the University of Singapore's Public Policy School, say a show of force backed by the U.S. Navy, part of the world's strongest military, near Benham Rise, should help to calm Filipinos upset by China's presence last year and those who simply prefer Washington to Beijing.
It assures the pro-American Filipinos that the Americans are not totally out of the Philippines, that there's still room for dialogue and cooperation. And so this exercise is just a calibration of Philippines-U.S. relations. So China is happy, Philippines happy, U.S. is happy.
Duterte angrily questioned American influence in the Philippines last year and ordered that its forces leave, but later backed down on most of his threats. China resents U.S. involvement in the South China Sea, a 3.5 million square kilometer tract that's rich in fish, shipping lanes, and possible fuel reserves. In 2014, former Philippine President Benigno Aquino signed an enhanced defense agreement with Washington. Joint naval exercises since that year had targeted possible scenarios aimed at resisting China in the disputed sea. Happening now in Asia, top U.S. officials who once described North Korea as a second-tier adversary now refer to it as an increasingly grave threat. Director of National Intelligence Dan Coats says Pyongyang is a very significant, potentially existential threat to the United States that has to be addressed. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. You're listening to VOA Asia, and we're glad that you're with us today. Thank you so much. Once renowned in Asia for its durability and versatility, traditional Korean paper called hanji is now produced only in a handful of rural paper mills. But Korean-American artist Amy Lee is dedicated to carrying on the 2,000-year-old tradition through her artwork and teaching. Molly McKitterick narrates for VOA's Jun So, who caught up with her at an exhibition in Washington, held in part to celebrate Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month.
This Korean dress is wearable. The very first dress that I made out of hanji was a Western dress, but as I was making more dresses, I thought, though just in the way that I had explored Korean paper, Korean wedding ducks, I thought it would be wonderful to explore Korean dress.
The dress and other artwork by Lee created with hanji, traditional Korean paper, are on display in a group exhibition at the Korean Cultural Center in Washington.
Delicacy and strength is what I've found in Korean paper. Paper and fabric are almost interchangeable in some ways, and that comes out in this exhibit. This exhibit is so wonderful.
Lee was born in New York. Her dedication to hanji started in 2008 when she went to Korea with a U.S. Fulbright grant to research the disappearing traditional paper arts. She had an opportunity to apprentice at a paper mill in a remote village. It was run by a fourth-generation family whose patriarch is the Korean national intangible cultural property holder of hanji making.
When I first came back from Korea, I was so committed to sharing everything I had learned because it was so compelling and so interesting. What I like best about hanji is that it's so versatile, so it can do so many things. I felt like the world really needed to know.
Working with the Morgan Conservatory, a nonprofit art center in Cleveland, Ohio, Lee built the first U.S. hanji studio in 2010 to make and share the craft of Korean papermaking. Each fall, mulberry trees whose inner bark is used to make hanji are harvested from the conservatory's garden.
I gather raw plant material from outside, and then I have to go through the process of stripping or sorting the parts that you need, and then cooking it in special solutions, and then rinsing it and beating it, and then making paper, and then making art from that. So it's a whole range from scratch.
The self-appointed hanji ambassador lectures or teaches workshops at art museums and universities across the country. Lee's passion for the paper led to her award-winning book, Hanji Unfurled, One Journey into Korean Papermaking.
Actually, more people not of Korean descent take my workshops than people of Korean descent. And so I think people actually who come are very, very open-minded. It's a way to learn about other cultures in a way that's very hands-on.
Lee also uses natural dyes she makes from kitchen scraps and flowers. Her artwork ranges from traditional objects to more contemporary woven paper objects. Many of her artist books reside in library collections, including Yale University Library.
I still feel like there's so much I can do and learn, and so I continue to use it, and I don't really see an end in sight.
For producer June So, I'm Molly McKitterick, VOA News, Washington.
And now that you've heard the story, you can see it. Go to our website at voanews.com or visit us on Facebook at VOA Asia. You're listening to VOA Asia.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
This news alert from VOA Asia. A group of at least four Islamic State militants stormed an office of Afghanistan state broadcaster in eastern Nangarhar province Wednesday, killing at least six people, wounding up to 20 others. Afghan President Ashraf Ghani condemned the violence as an attack on free speech. Stay up to date throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. You know, there's an old proverb that goes, nothing is certain but death and taxes. And funeral expenses can run into tens of thousands of dollars depending on how elaborate the funeral is. As VOA Asia's David Bird tells us, the Hong Kong Funeral Expo features some funeral items that are not only inexpensive, but also environmentally friendly.
Alex Sun is a businessman. The business he deals in is death. Well, actually, what happens after you die. Alex's company is Shandong Eco Coffin International, and it makes wicker and seagrass coffins for environmentally friendly funerals. Basket weaving in Shandong dates back to the Tang Dynasty between the 7th and 10th centuries in China, so it seemed only natural that the fast-growing willow reeds would make the perfect casket material. Alex Sun says that he thinks that as Asia's population gets older, some of those who will be leaving us will want to leave an eco-friendly legacy, and that will help his business grow.
I think eco-funeral is a global trend. It is starting a trend in Europe. We already have customers from Australia and South Africa where the trend is developing there, which shows eco-funeral isn't just a trend in one particular country, but worldwide. China, as a big country, will also develop the trend.
Sun is one of several coffin makers, morticians, funeral home operators, and business people from 18 countries who have come together in Hong Kong for the Asia Funeral and Cemetery Expo and Conference. He says that the eco-friendly coffin trend is already showing up in Southeast Asia, and he expects it to spread.
European customers already know this product, while Asian customers are also interested in it and would love to learn more, especially customers from the Philippines, Malaysia, and Vietnam. This concept is fairly new in mainland China, and very few are manufacturing these, but customers show keen interest in this product.
Li Zhongyan is a funeral cosmetologist. She does makeup and reconstruction for funerals. But she uses an airbrush to apply the makeup and says that it is not only more aesthetically pleasing, but also more hygienic than traditional techniques.
The most important thing is that the airbrush makeup is very hygienic. When you put makeup on a dead body, you don't know the reason why the deceased passed away. Maybe they had a disease. Maybe they had an accident. The body may be contaminated. So the most important thing about airbrush is hygiene, because you don't have to rub the skin directly.
Lee says that her technique can work for a variety of cases, even when the person's body has been badly damaged or submerged.
There was a sailor who died in a ship. She wasn't found for a long time. Her skin became very hard and the skin tone changed a lot. If we use traditional makeup, you cannot put makeup on hard skin. If I use airbrush makeup, it is easier to put on the funeral makeup and it looks natural.
The expo also features companies selling caskets for pets, a German company selling its cremators with high-tech filters, and an Italian company selling its hearses. There are also plenty of traditional caskets made of a variety of materials and cremation urns of varying sizes, colors, and shapes. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
Developing at this hour in Asia, the Burmese Buddhist monk known for whipping up anti-Muslim sentiment in Myanmar is the subject of a new documentary airing at France's renowned Cannes Film Festival underway now. The Venerable W by filmmaker Barbe Schroeder will appear in a special screening. All the big stories come your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, recently one of the largest computer hacks of its kind hit companies and governments around the world. It's an example of the challenges in digital security and keeping ahead of technology. VOA's Elizabeth Lee tells us the U.S. military has developed a way to tap into the innovation and speed that's unique to Silicon Valley and tech startups.
This may look like just another Silicon Valley company with people coding at their desk, but Capella Space has a unique customer, the U.S. military.
We like to work with the government because we think we can help the government save money, bring a capability that doesn't exist, and through that hopefully save some lives.
An immigrant from Iran, Payam Banazodeh, now builds a special kind of satellite that is a bit bigger than a shoebox.
In fact, this is a military-type technology. The problem is the satellites that military uses are massive.
Capella can build satellites smaller, cheaper, and faster than traditional military satellites. Now the U.S. military can be a customer of Capella's satellite data quickly through a new Defense Department group called Defense Innovation Unit Experimental, or DIUX.
So the Department of Defense is the world's largest bureaucracy. There are some things that are of a secret nature and must be protected. And of course, everything that our soldiers touch could have life or death implications.
As a result, the military tends to be risk adverse and in many cases will only adopt technology when it is perfect. But by then, the technology may be outdated. The tech startup culture is the opposite, where risk and speed drive innovation.
you know, have this minimal viable product that you launch really quickly into the market and learn about it and iterate and try to do this as quickly as possible.
At the Milken Institute Global Conference recently, Silicon Valley experts emphasized the importance of keeping up with technology.
As a broad statement, government systems are not using the latest forms of operating systems, encryptions, and mechanisms.
As the most recent global cyber attack proves, it is a constant race to stay ahead of threats. Housed in this building in the middle of Silicon Valley, DIUX is a bridge that brings together the different cultures of Silicon Valley startups and the U.S. military to meet national security needs.
Technology is always changing, and if you have only legacy equipment, it actually gives the bad guys more time to figure out what the vulnerabilities are. If we're constantly evolving, right, it's a cat and mouse game between attackers and defenders, and we won't be on the winning side of that.
That starts with DIUX doing away with much of the paperwork and bureaucracy traditionally involved with having the military as a customer. Since its inception 18 months ago, DIUX has worked with more than 30 tech companies across the U.S. and the world. Capella Space plans to launch its satellite in about 6 months. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Mountain View, California.
Muscle stiffness is one of the effects of progressive muscle diseases like cerebral palsy. There are drugs and therapies that are supposed to help, but gauging their effectiveness can be challenging. VOA's Kevin Enix tells us there's now a high-tech way that may help provide relief for patients.
She's quick.
Dr. Andrew Skalski is checking cerebral palsy patient Mike Crossley for muscle stiffness. His treatment recommendation is based almost entirely on these exercises, and he admits it's not an exact science.
We probably have patients on a bunch of medicines that aren't actually doing anything for them, which they don't need to take, but we have them on them because they feel better and we don't have a good system to say if it's really helping them. Or we might have them on too low a dose or too high a dose, so it'll help with dosing a lot.
But this glove, tipped with over 300 sensors, could change the hit-or-miss nature of treating muscle stiffness.
So this technology will, in addition to what they do, it will provide objective metrics that they can refine their diagnosis and refine their interventions.
It works by noting the amount of pressure on each sensor as the doctor manipulates different parts of the patient's body. It was developed with a mock arm that looks a lot like an exercise machine. Developers say that without the glove, doctors and patients agreed on the level of muscle stiffness only about 26% of the time. But the glove made a huge difference.
So we developed the mock patient that you saw. That has its own sensors, and it is also measuring how much work is being done in moving the mock patient arm. And by comparing the numbers that come from the glove and the mock patient, we are now at 82%. So things have really improved.
Dr. Skalski says he hopes the glove can take some of the guesswork out of his diagnoses.
And so it'll hopefully bring new therapies to market and improve our patient care as far as which medicines work better for individual patients, which treatments are working, which doses are more optimal for them, and just really help make medicine a much more precise science instead of our art of medicine that we are currently using, which ends up being a lot of not scientific processes.
The glove is still in development, but could someday provide more exact feedback for all kinds of diseases, including stroke and traumatic brain injury. Kevin Enix, VOA News, Washington.
Time for you to take your gloves off and write to us. You can message us on Facebook at VOA Asia or write us an email at voaasia@voanews.com. We'd love to hear from you. We'll even write back. It's great to find out what you're up to, especially if you're listening from the voice of Chung Rung, Star Radio FM 88.3. We invite you to get in touch with us and let us know what you think of our program. We'd like to thank our director, Tracy Carter, and engineer, Jim Harmon, for their great work today. Managing editor, Diane Gao, as well. And our VOA Asia team, including Ali Ogden and David Bird. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have a great day.